Back with you on The Leader. Dieter Kurtenbach hanging out until 10 p.m., or so I'm told. Jake Hutchinson of KMBR.com covers the 49ers for us there. He joins us now on the UMA guest line. Jake, how's your Friday night going, buddy? Or not. Do we have Jake? Jake, my friend, how are you?
I muted myself. So coming in hot. You know how it is. Sorry.
I've done it before.
Yeah, I was just picking my some berries in the backyard, you know, living the dream.
Party. That is what I'm talking about.
Things are getting wild, wild over here.
Oh, my goodness. Picking some berries in the backyard. Jake, you are a Renaissance man if there ever was one. Let's talk some 49ers. Not to interrupt your berry picking, but, you know, they didn't go out and trade for Julio Jones, and it doesn't really sound like they were in any way hot and heavy in talks with the Atlanta Falcons. What did you make of sort of the way the 49ers handled it, why they didn't, you know, honestly, they probably could have put up the capital to get him. What do you just make of the whole Julio Jones pursuit or lack thereof?
Yeah, I think it was something where, you know, part of that was probably, you know, Parag and those guys being like, listen, like if we want to keep this thing sustainable long term, we can't go the Rams route and just have no first and second round picks, you know, which I get, especially because Julio's older and I'm sure they have, you know, some sort of, you know, analytics about what type of players are worth going for. And, you know, this is not a team that seems to, you know, value wide receivers in terms of like spending a lot of money on them. You know, the one guy they did recently was like Marquise Goodwin, and, you know, that didn't pan out all that well.
Nope.
Yeah, I think it's something where, you know, if it was like a sort of feasible cap figure, well, first of all, other teams would have bid more for him. But two, then I think they would have been more into it. I just think I was a little surprised by how much they seem to value that draft capital, given how much, you know, Kyle loved Julio. And
well, and yeah, beyond that, they gave up so much for Trey Lance. I thought that they had kind of turned the page there.
Right. And I think it's something where they're like sort of looking long term, where it's like, you know, is Trey going to be ready this year? Do we actually believe Jimmy is still the guy this year? Like, let's make sure that we have flexibility so that we can reload, and that, you know, if they keep cap space open this year, they've got some avenues open to make trades during the year. You know, they're a team that, I don't know if you know this, but has struggled with injuries.
Yeah, I've
heard. So I think they might have that in mind, that, hey, you know, we literally can never, like, you go back to the Harbaugh era, the last 6-7 years, regardless of what training staff it is, the 49ers are always in the bottom tier of the league in terms of injuries. I don't know what it is, but it's always been like that.
What the hell? I mean, honestly, do you have any I literally chalked it up to the injury boogeyman in a column the other day, because I got nothing. I'm out of answers.
No, I don't think they know. I mean, they turned over, you know, you had staff in the Harbaugh era, there was turnover, and then there was, you know, they hired a whole new training staff the other year, and it's made no difference.
Super weird.
You know, and it's something, it's, you know, it's weird. And so I asked Kyle, like, you know, how do you balance the need to, like, you know, protect guys in camp? You know, they don't want to have full-on contact and have injuries in camp. But you also need that early on, or else guys will get injured during the season. So it's like, I think there's like a battle of, you know, analytics and how many reps guys can get versus like, oh, if you don't hit people early on, you're going to break down pretty quickly. So, you know, I think they probably manage that similar to other teams, and they're probably just as confounded as everyone else, you know?
The Amador Lenore showed that they were maybe using a little bit too much contact in a rookie mini camp. I don't really know what it was. They had a bunch of rookies around, and there was more contact than was allowed. I loved how Kyle Shanahan's like, no, I canceled mini camp next week, and the NFL is like, no, in fact, we canceled it for you. Do you make anything out of this? Is this much ado about nothing? And how deep in the doghouse do you think Mr. Lenore is after I don't even know if he signed a contract yet at this juncture?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he has, and it might only be Lance and one other guy. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But yeah, that was a real rookie move. To be fair, pretty sick clip, You know, you're playing coverage.
It did make him look awesome.
Snagged the ball out of the air.
Yeah.
He looked great. And that's why I got a million views, and that's why the 49ers got fined. because you can't do that early.
Nope.
And so basically the NFL, they didn't fine them. I just said they fined them. They didn't fine them. They docked them a week, basically, of the last week of rookie minicamp. And then Kyle, basically after the school and Tarvarius Moore injuries, canceled the last day of OTAs, and then they went bowling. And Lowell Cohn was very upset about that. I love Lowell's takes because I really identify with getting upset about things that sort of don't matter, because I do it all the time, and I kind of respect it.
He did get mad about bowling, man. I don't know what to say about that.
That's awesome. It's something that didn't even cross my mind. I'm like, oh, that sounds nice.
Was his suggestion that somebody could get injured bowling? Was that the suggestion?
Right. And the more you think about it, the more you're like, that's not that unreasonable. Like,
no.
That probably could happen. Like, take him to the movies, Kyle.
Yeah, no, listen, we live in a very take-filled world, and certainly you and I participate in that. Aplenty, but I just didn't think that bowling is a dangerous activity was going to hit the timeline, and yet it did.
No,
and
awesome.
You know what? This is why Lowell Cohn was very well employed in the Bay Area for years and years and years as a predominant columnist.
Legend.
I mean, just a legend. Legend's the right word, because that man was able to find a take out of going bowling, and it wasn't unreasonable. That is next level.
Right.
That, we could never.
Right.
We could
right.
never. But he
there's
could.
A real art to it. No.
It's true. It's true. We're talking to Jake Hutchinson on a Friday night about Lowell Cohn's tweets, as one expected when we brought him on the airwaves here. Tony Jefferson signs with the 49ers. Does that do anything for you? Do you feel any sort of way about Tony Jefferson now being in red and gold?
Yeah, I was deeply emotional. I was crying.
Tears. Tears of joy.
It wasn't related to Tony Jefferson. It's just, you know, how I spend my days.
Yes. Well, yeah, you went bowling earlier, so.
Right. No, I think it is actually a pretty sneaky good move if he's healthy, which I hate doing the if he's healthy thing. It should just be, you know.
Sneaky good and if he's healthy are two great football cliches
right.
in one sentence.
Exactly. But it is something where he didn't play last year. He had time to recover. And when he was with the Ravens, and I think it was the Cardinals before mm-hmm. that, he was really good. He was extremely well-respected in that Ravens locker room. When he got cut, they were pretty – like, players were pretty vocally, like, disappointed about it.
Yep.
And it was something where I believe he might have been a captain. Either way, very well-respected guy. He wasn't a Pro Bowler, but he's one of those guys that was like sort of on a fringe, kind of like Jaquaski Tart.
True.
Where, you know, if you get a little bit more attention, maybe you have a few more turnovers, maybe you get that sort of recognition. But great, great depth addition. You know, it's going to be basically a cheap veteran contract. And, you know, the rest of that safety room, you've got Hufanga, you've got like Marcel Harris, a bunch of guys where you don't totally know, like you can't totally trust them. He's sort of like a safe backup option that I think is you know, it's not a huge move, but it's really solid for a pretty cheap price.
Listen, the 49ers lose Robert Saleh to the Jets. He's the head coach there now, and you and I both will do anything that Robert Saleh says. We believe him to be the truest
right.
leader of all men. There's something about him. He smells great, which is something I feel.
I think he's coaching the Islanders now.
He was so amped up at the Islanders game the other day. I'm pretty sure that it spurred him into the Eastern Conference Finals. Nevertheless, you know, D'Amico Ryans has a really tough job in front of him now, where he's sort of inherited this ready-made defense. And, you know, he says he wants to put a stamp on it. And then you ask him the other day what the stamp is. And he's like, we want to play fast and physical, as if all the other defenses have been trying to be slow and passive up until this point. So it's one of those things where it's like, I'm not really sure anything's going to change. But one of the guys I was really excited to see that, you know, maybe Ryans would do something interesting with, maybe a Sam linebacker as a big nickel, was Tarvarius Moore. And he's the reason that Tony Jefferson is now on the 49ers, because he tears his Achilles tendon in practice, apparently against air. I don't know. Does Jefferson sort of lock the Niners into just sort of a basic cover two, cover four scheme at this juncture?
I don't think so. I think, you know, they've got some other younger guys. They've got, like, Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, who started off as a safety, and I think they quietly really like as one of their sort of backup linebackers, because he's got that versatility.
Okay.
He didn't play a lot of snaps in terms of, you know, actual base defense, but he's got a lot of speed. I think Hufanga, they feel like, is sort of similar. Marcel Harris, they basically just started playing him as a linebacker, yep. and it worked all right. So I think they have enough guys like that that are basically linebackers, but, you know, just have sort of downhill speed and can theoretically play in coverage. So I just think Jefferson is more of a guy where you sort of know what you have in him, as opposed to all of those sort of, you know, question mark guys where you're like, hey, he can move downhill really fast, but right. he might go into another, you know, dimension if, you know,
don't make him turn
a play action. Yeah.
Do you expect a different defense at all, or am I onto something there with the sort of, this is going to be the same? Cause don't forget, I mean, you know, Robert Saleh came in, they were going to run cover three. They were a hardcore cover three team. Even when every team in the NFL had figured out how to beat cover three, Robert Saleh's like, no, we still run cover three. And then eventually he changes and the 49ers go to the Super Bowl. And then a year after that, right. he's the head coach of the Jets. I don't know if, you know, cover six, cover seven, cover four, cover two is something to where you really need to change it up because the league has figured it out. But do you expect any baseline schematic changes with the defensive coordinator changeover?
No, I think it's going to be it's not broken, you know, don't fix it.
Fair.
And I think that's sort of going to be a challenge that DeMeco has to face is you have to put your own stamp on a defense, but don't force it. You know, like it's yeah. worked, you know, sort of assess what works. And if personnel, like you get injuries or something's not working, you know, then make adjustments. But it's tough right now before training camp. I think we'll see a lot more and sort of have a better idea of what he's thinking as we get into training camp. But right now, I think he's probably going to stick to a lot of what Saleh does. One thing that does interest me is I think they played like 25% cover four, like sneakily got up really mm-hmm. high playing yep. that coverage.
Yep.
And they blitzed, I think, like 10, 15% more than they did the prior year, but that was really due to injuries.
Right, they didn't have any pass rush pressure unless they blitzed.
Right. So I think where we'll see it is if the 49ers actually blitz a similar amount as last year,
okay.
that would actually be a schematic shift because
right. Fair enough.
You're basically last year's defense wasn't what they wanted to run. It was everyone's injured, we don't have our defensive line working, so we have to make adjustments.
Yeah.
If they blitz like 40% of the time and they have Nick Bosa, that's a schematic shift.
Sure.
So the numbers would look the same, but it would be a more sort of aggressive, hey, we're actually going to blitz more. And I don't know how much to expect of that, but I do think he'll look to use, you know, some of those safeties and their versatility and come off the edge because they did have a lot of success with that. And I think there is sort of a balance between, you know, almost never blitzing and blitzing, you know, a third, a fourth, you know, mm-hmm. of the time.
It's interesting, too. I'm glad you brought that up because it's just a reminder. Maybe I shouldn't bring this up because it'll make people pine for the days. But, like, that's how good of a coach Saleh was, man. Like, they didn't blitz at all. That was their whole thing. We don't blitz.
Insane.
We get home with four, and then we blanket the field. And then the next year he's like, we have nobody, so I guess we're a full-on blitzing team now. And go ahead, Kerry Hyder. Maybe you can bring it home. And they had a top-five defense both years. I mean, that is not
right.
normal what they were able to do. And Ryan's, I wrote up a column the other day for the Merc, like, it's not fair. I think everyone likes DeMeco Ryans. We all think that he was a good hire. We don't know him all that well, but, like, he's very well respected inside the 49ers facility. He would have gotten a DC job with another team. I wouldn't have been surprised had he been hired as the head coach of the Texans, given how low on the totem pole they went to get their head coach eventually, who I forgot existed until yesterday.
Good luck to David Culley, who I know nothing about.
Yeah, no, I forgot David Culley existed. By the way, they canceled minicamp as well because the Houston Texans, who might go winless this year, they're fully prepared. They don't need to do anything more this spring. They canceled their minicamp.
They signed like 70 guys.
All
it's
of them
incredible.
Running backs as well.
Right.
But
it's an awesome Madden strategy, by the way, where you just have your $20 million and you're like, I'm signing every running back for $1 million. You know, it's great.
We can have that conversation some other time because that will last longer than the airwave time that I have tonight. But it is a reminder that, like, Ryan's takes something that is expected to be good and he has to make sure in his first year that it is good. Otherwise, it's his fault, right? Like the
Right.
You could say, oh, well, everyone wanted Robert Saleh's head after 2 years, but the defensive players stunk. And when he finally got good defensive players, he looked like a good defensive coordinator. And then last year he proved he was a really good defensive coordinator. Now he's a head coach. Ryans can't blame the players. The players are there. Like, they have the dudes. So if the defense stinks, even with just basic regression, it's his fault. And that is not a fun spot to
really,
be.
Really tough for him is, you know, ideally with any coach, you want to give them a learning curve, and he deserves one, but he does. Sure. He won't get one.
No.
You know, when you come into this defense and you take over a team that's just been dominant, and they're going to regress, at least, you know, in some aspects, it's sort of inevitable. You know, but he doesn't have time to really, you know, make mistakes. You know, he has to be effective immediately. And it's not fair, but it's also like, hey, you're the defensive coordinator now. This is your this is your time. You have to be effective. And I don't really have any great concerns. I mean,
I don't know which way to think about it.
It's OTAs. You know, it's the middle of the summer, and it's
fire everybody. Seen, OTAs were bad.
I mean, let's be honest. We were watching practices. We literally couldn't see the defensive backs because there's Javon Kinloff standing in front of us.
He's
and they're on the other side of the field. And we're like, who is that? And, you know, we're all just like old men yelling. No one can see anything. So I won't pretend like I know what his scheme is exactly going to look like. It's going to look similar, but we don't know what sort of wrinkles he's going to throw. But, yeah, he's not going to have sort of the same time frame to fail. He's going to have to be effective.
Have you ever been more excited for preseason football?
I kept bringing that up. Is like, this is, you know, Kyle Shanahan complains about preseason. He's always wanted, I think, two games.
Last year was his favorite game.
Preseason. He's going to love this preseason. He, like, you know, going down to practice with the Chargers, you know, having three games, that's his dream.
It's absolutely fantastic, and I think as much as Kyle will want to hold stuff back, and certainly Ryans will want to hold stuff back, we're going to just naturally learn a lot about this team. Not enough to make maybe a broad judgment, but, boy, it's certainly going to answer some of the questions that remain. I want to flip over here before we let you go. We're talking to Jake Hutchinson of KMBR.com on the UMA guest line about the offensive line. You did a great profile on Aaron Banks, who – it's easy to forget after Trey Lance goes and you give up all the first round picks to get Trey Lance, and you can breathe a sigh of relief because Mac Jones wasn't the pick. They picked this Banks kid in the second round, and that was a bit of a shock for a lot of people. Not that they drafted a guard, but that, well, actually maybe that they drafted a guard in the second round. That's not something, that Kyle Shanahan has shown.
Hey, Mike McDaniel said it. He was like, we haven't done that.
No. And I just thought that guard was a position that Kyle Shanahan did not value, but clearly he values it by drafting Aaron Banks. What do we know about Banks? Because now there's also, I don't know if it's founded. In fact, I would say it's patently unfounded. There's concerns that he's not a scheme fit. What do we know about Banks, and what do you think about his fit in the scheme?
Right. What it comes down to is he's a very large dude, and the 49ers have used Brunskill and you know, Mike Person, who are a little bit smaller, and guys who are just, you know, you look at them and you're like, oh, that's a smaller, agile guard. That's what Kyle likes. And it's the same thing with quarterbacks where, you know, he wants the Kirk Cousins types, which, you know, he loves those guys too. So, you know, but it's clear that Kyle has a larger palate. Basically, the thing with Banks is, you know, under his previous offensive coordinator, Chip Long, who I talked to, they ran a lot more gap schemes. A lot more power stuff where, you know, he was asked to be more of a straight downhill bully guard, you know, not sort of pin and pull, get out in space as much. Although he did say that, you know, Banks is the best, you know, one of the best screen blocking offensive linemen he's ever had. And they would go out of their way to get him involved in screens. And when you see him get down the field, it's like a freight train coming at you.
Yes. That's what I'm talking about, baby.
So, but when you look at zone stuff, they started to run it more last year. Notre Dame actually did run a decent amount of it, and he looked really good. You know, it's something where you sort of don't expect it with his size, but he did not have any issues running zone. Like I sometimes, you know, everyone gets beat. Everyone has bad tape occasionally, but I don't really have any concerns about him in this fit. And the 49ers run a decent amount of gap stuff too.
Do you think that he starts week one? It's a guess, but do you guess it?
I think so. It's going to be early on in the year, whether it's week one or later. I think how he looks in pass protection will dictate it. too, because that's sort of where you're more of a liability. Mm-hmm. But if I had to guess, I'd say yes, he starts week one. I think that might also depend on how they see the swing tackle situation. Like, you know, maybe if they see Daniel Brunskill as the swing tackle, you know, they're like, hey, let's not start him at guard. Let's just keep him as our reserve player and make sure he's healthy. Whereas, you know, maybe Brunskill just looks dominant at guard and, you know, Banks isn't quite ready. But yeah, I guess he starts week one. There'll be people where, you know, if he doesn't, they'll be like, oh, terrible pick. you know, I get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I had to guess, let's say he does, because, you know, what are you going to come for my head if he doesn't?
Yes.
Fair. Go for it.
there's one other battle that I want to talk about here. It's third down, third wide receiver. Now that it's not Julio Jones, who, let's be honest, that would have been surplus to needs. You have Richie James, Juwan Jennings. Apparently the corpse of Mohamed Sanu has been resurrected and is well in OTAs. Who else? I mean, Jalen Hurd, who I'm not sure really exists. He might just be a myth at this point.
Right.
Travis Benjamin, who is also mythical in my mind. I've never actually seen Travis Benjamin play as far as I can remember. How do you see that all shaking out? There's probably going to be like three more dudes that are added, by the way. Kevin White.
Right. They're going to sign like four other wide receivers and, you know, the entire camp. I'm sure they're going to have
Wes Welker.
They're going to say someone has, you know, it's a minor calf strain and, you know, it's, we're just being careful. And then it's like, oh no, he tore his calf.
Right. We'll find out 4 months
later. I'm
sure
that's going to happen. Right. The way I see it is Richie James, it's basically Richie James' job to lose as the like starting slot receiver, but he doesn't have the height. And I think there is something to that. And so I do think Mohamed Sanu looks like he did in OTAs. He's going to make the roster and he's going to be the taller slot option. And they're going to just say, you know what, like we're going to see what we have and sort of try and moneyball it. And then if it doesn't work, we're going to do what we did and buy a receiver at the trade deadline like we did with Emmanuel Sanders. I don't really have a problem with that strategy.
Is there something to be said, though? Like, James was really good on the outside when they gave him run on the outside last year.
I agree. I think
he
looks better on the outside.
You can just slide Ayuk or Debo into the middle. Make them the slot guy on that down. Just have him on the outside.
And that sort of does happen. Debo plays in the slot a lot, you know, especially when they do sort of
rounds and stuff, yeah.
Two men. Right. Yeah, I do think there is something to that. And, you know, maybe that helps keep Debo healthier, you know, keeping him on the inside. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Probably not.
I'm just
saying. Seems more physical in there.
Right.
I want him as far away from the action as possible, but it's also not his game.
Who knows, man? But yeah, I think it's Richie James' job to lose at this point. But it really is like it's Debo, Ayuk, Richie James, and, you know, like, you don't know. No, nothing's a certainty. And you know, that's kind of a concern. Also, they signed a tight end, Michael Pruitt, so good for them getting some blocking help there.
Yeah, well, they needed it because their two blocking tight ends can't block anybody, which seems problematic.
Don't look at the PFF stats from last year because
– Don't. It's bad. Oof,
Ross Dwelly, Charlie Warner, Jordan Reed – bottom tier blockers in the league last year.
Well, it's good. I mean, George Kittle's shoulder could definitely handle all of the responsibilities on every down. I know he wants it. I'm not sure his body can handle it.
His torn shoulder, which he refuses to surgically repair.
Yeah. Yeah. Conversation for another day, my friend. Where are you going on vacation this summer?
I'm going up to Seattle next weekend. I'm going to go see the Mariners.
Yep.
Might eat some, you know, crickets. I think they've got those there.
They do. I had them. They're great.
Oh, I'm going to get, you know, drunk on overpriced beer.
Oh, it's the best beer in
Centerfield.
And then
I'm going to go to a racetrack out there. You know those little, like, truck things that have, like, flaps that are slanted upwards?
You're talking about sprint on, like, cars.
Yes.
One of my best friends is a world expert in sprint car dirt track racing. He has been trying to get me to go to one for a decade. He has yet to succeed.
I can't wait.
Let me know how it goes.
I just want to hear... It's going to be great. It's just going to be cars zooming around, everyone going, hell yeah.
Yeah, that's about 4 hours outside of Seattle, by the way.
Right, just drinking tall boys, like just watching cars go vroom.
Those are my people.
Could be better?
Legitimately, that sounds pretty damn awesome, my friend.
Well, I can't wait.
Looking forward to that for you. We will certainly hook up at some point between now and the start of training camp. We will try to find out if Jalen Hurd is, in fact, a real person in between now and then. I don't know if we'll get to the bottom of it, but we will go full detective and try to get the answer. Jake Hutchinson of KMBR.com. He has all the answers for us on a night-in, night-out basis. Thanks for coming on, our friend.
Hey, no worries.
Jake Hutchinson, ladies and gentlemen. It is kind of funny that he's going to a sprint car race before I am. That is not going to go over well in the Kurtenbach household when word gets out. I cannot express it. My best friend has been like, you got to come to a dirt track race with me. You got to do it. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to drive 3 hours outside of St. Louis so that I can watch some cars go in a small circle. And now Jake is all about it. I'm getting sprint cars in all directions. Maybe I have to give in. We'll find out. Maybe I build that into my summer. Here's what we're going to build in now, though. Some ads. We got to play them so that they'll pay us. Kurtenbach in for Willard on the Sports Leader.
KNBR tonight on KNBR, the Sports Leader. In business, it's never just another day. Every day is the day.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.